This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
The very incomplete data on people who die from police action nationwide, plus private insurance companies can play a powerful role in reforming police practices. I'm David Brancaccio. The protests following the death of George Floyd at the hands of Minneapolis police have been recorded in recent days in more than 130 cities nationwide. Public anger and frustration is focused on the persistence of racial disparities and how law enforcement uses deadly force. It's hard to quantify just how bad that disparity is. The federal data on killings by police nationwide now covers fewer than half of the officers in America. Marketplace's Kimberly Adams has been looking into why these numbers are so thin.
Primarily because not all police departments participate. The FBI has something called the National Use of Force Data Collection Program. It's a way for state, local, and tribal law enforcement to submit a standardized set of information anytime an officer kills someone, seriously injures someone, or shoots at someone. The agency started collecting this data in January of 2019, and the FBI told me that as of Friday, about 40% of law enforcement officers nationwide are participating.
All right. So what kind of information do police departments submit to this?
So it's supposed to include demographic data like the race, age, ethnicity, about both the officer involved as well as the person who is the subject of the use of force. The FBI says that can educate the public and inform law enforcement training. It's also supposed to include information on the type of force used, whether the person was armed, and ultimately what happened to that person.
You said about 40% of officers are covered by the data we now have, but how reliable are the numbers that are in the system already?
Right. So those numbers come from a regulatory filing, and this is really a question of resources. The program is voluntary, and that's partly because the job of collecting and submitting this data falls to local law enforcement. And it's not the only documentation they have to fill out. It does take time. The FBI estimates about 38 minutes per incident. And given that time translates into working hours for officers, local law enforcement agencies get to decide whether to prioritize whether they want to pay for that time.
Briefly, a year and a half into this, what have we learned?
Nothing yet. I asked the FBI about where the numbers are. They said they were going to release them twice a year. They said we're going to get the first batch this summer.
Kimberly, thank you. Now, if a city can't get liability insurance for its police force, they can't have police. Can insurance companies then be a driver of better policing? Let's turn to a law professor who has studied this, the University of Chicago's John Rappaport. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
So liability insurance that municipalities take out can be a force for social change?
It can. When an insurance company writes coverage for police liability, the insurance company puts itself in a position where it improves its bottom line to reduce police misconduct. So just as your property insurer wants to make sure that your building doesn't burn down, a police liability insurer wants to make sure that the police department it's insuring doesn't do things that trigger liability.
So there is some engagement on the part of the insurance company. It's not just like at the end of the term of the policy, we'll renew you or we won't. They actually, there's back and forth.
There is. It varies across insurers. In general, there is engagement. You see the insurance companies participating in the training and education of officers. You see them auditing police departments by actually sending adjusters out to go visit the department. So there are various ways that the insurance companies have for working with the departments they insure to try to reduce the risk.
Probably makes some people nervous, the idea that this perhaps faceless corporation is having such an important role in public policy.
Yeah, I understand. And there's a downside here. I mean, I want to emphasize, if insurance companies are not doing a good job at trying to manage the risk, they could actually be making things worse. This is the idea of moral hazard, right? When you get insurance coverage, you drive a little bit less carefully. You have to follow up with the kinds of loss prevention or risk management, and only then is there a possibility that you could be actually making things better.
John Rappaport is a professor at the University of Chicago Law School. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Palo Alto Networks. As you innovate to transform your business in today's digital world, how do you stay secure? At Palo Alto Networks, our mission is to protect your digital way of life. Whether it's unprecedented opportunities or uncertainties with AI and whatever comes next, we continually deliver innovation to make each day safer and more secure than the one before. More at paloaltonetworks.com.
In early trading here, stock indexes are mixed after Bloomberg News reported China is stopping some imports of U.S. farm products like soybeans and pork amid moves by the Trump administration to withdraw Hong Kong's special trade status. This suggests the U.S.-China trade deal might be in some jeopardy. Chinese officials are now accusing the Trump administration of hypocrisy when it comes to public dissent. Here's Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer.
Over the weekend, Chinese foreign ministry officials and the state-owned media accused President Trump of a double standard. They accused the president of praising Hong Kong protesters, but cracking down harshly on demonstrators in the U.S. One foreign ministry spokeswoman tweeted out George Floyd's last words, "I can't breathe." In response to a tweet from a U.S. State Department spokeswoman, she had accused China of breaking its promises to the people of Hong Kong after the Chinese government approved a tough new security law for the territory. Last week, President Trump said he would end preferential treatment for Hong Kong. So, for example, Hong Kong would be subject to export controls that keep some sensitive U.S. technology from going to China. It's not clear if Hong Kong will have to start paying U.S. tariffs on its exports. I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
The Dow is down 28 points, a tenth percent. The S&P is down a point. The NASDAQ is up a tenth percent. Interest rates are still pandemic low, 0.68% for the 10-year yield, the benchmark. I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
"What is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?"
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.